Thank you, Lord, for the preaching of your word. We thank you for a word worthy of preaching. And Father, someday, somehow, we're going to hear it preached, perhaps in glory like it ought to be preached. I look forward to the day when I not only see you, but I'll hear you teach your own words. I like that thought. And Lord, I'm eager to hear you explain passages that have been hitherto closed in my understanding, to teach old, basic, wonderful truths that have jumped at me time and time again. But Lord, that day awaits, and right now we have this moment, and we have these many thousands before us. And so, Lord, help us to do right and justly with the word we've been given here. Amen. Little phrase in the passage Brother Colton led us in reading. The scripture said, and when they had sent away the multitude, they took him even as he was in the ship, and there were also with him other little ships. Other little ships. In many songs, the church is described as being a ship. We are familiar with terminology, the old ship of Zion. There are songs that make us enjoy our Christianity, and again and again, the analogy, the description is that of the large ship, Christianity, or the local church. And there's a tendency, however, in each generation for their ship to forget the purpose of a ship, and the purpose of a ship is to sail. The purpose of a ship is not to be stalled in a harbor, to anchor deeply and to stay and to rot. That's to do with old ships. They're no longer seaworthy. They put them in some safe, quiet, subdued, sheltered harbor and become a museum. And people talk about the good old days when that ship sailed, and here's the battle it fought, and here's the war it fought in, and here's the toll of the sailors that died, and on and on. The tendency in the Christian life is to get stuck on shore and to not fulfill your mission. And Jesus here was saying to his disciples, we did a good job here at this place. He said, I'll keep that ship and let's go across to the other side. And as he did so, he made sure that the other little ships came with him as well. There was a ship in which he was and his immediate disciples, but the Bible says there were other little ships. Ships that, in this story, Jesus was not in them, but he was nonetheless concerned for them. Ships that were not as large, but nonetheless just as important. Other little ships. I speak tonight of the younger next generation, the other little ships. Little ships like the little gal, the toddler girl down here, who comes to my office every Sunday morning and screams out my name, which she did this morning because I scared her and opened the door first. It's Halloween, so I put the mask on. But I beat her to it today. And other little ships, like the little children that are around you here, the 4 and 5 year olds that are sitting in big church tonight, other little ships that are the next generation coming up behind us. Not only the other little ships of the younger generation, I'll say more about that later on, but the other little ships that I call the younger, smaller churches that are looking to Hammond, Indiana to see their direction, leadership, watching what we do, wondering about our new auditorium, wondering about what's happening to our church. If you notice that people who are from around the country and they come back here, they're still stuck in the mode that we had to go through about 3.5-4 years ago. They still live in an era where they're still surprised with the house and don't walk out that door there. And I hurt for them as they come and visit me. They'll stop by the office and say, you doing okay? Yeah, we're doing great. It's almost like, how can you be doing well? They got stuck in they got stuck on shore. And they anchored their ships, anchored deeply in a harbor. And it's not a bad harbor, but ships are made for sailing, and that's what we must do. It is very important that you understand that this ship right here called First Baptist Church of Hammond is not designed to put out its anchor and to just park itself on what we have done. It is important for our nation, especially as I think about our theme this day, a vote for our nation. It's important that First Baptist Church of Hammond, Indiana, and it goes to the other side. So I want to say, jumping in the message tonight, First Baptist Church, we must pass to the other side. As it said right here, Jesus said, let us pass over unto the other side. Let us make progress. Let us move to the next shore, lest we become too complacent with where we are. Lest we become too settled where we are. Lest the sailors find themselves enjoying leave too much and don't want to get on board. Lest they get their land legs too much and they lose their sea legs. Let's pass on to the other side. It would have been much easier for First Baptist Church to not have built that auditorium. That's a lot of money there. There's a whole lot of money we've had to raise, and money we're borrowing, and money that we have taken from other areas that could have been used for higher pay raises. I thought about how plush we could have made the pay scale here at First Baptist Church. We've taken all the money that would be used for building an auditorium and simply said, let's pay all you fellows what you think you're worth. Not what we think you're worth, but what you think you're worth. And let's give them the money. Let's give them $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year and let them be treated like the good men and the fine ladies they are, serving on meager rations, so to speak, relatively speaking. It would be much easier not to build that auditorium and launch into trying to acclimate to a new pastorate and take on the largest building project in our 117-year history. In fact, larger than nearly every, in fact, all other projects combined together. It is a much easier course to stay on the shore and not get in the boat and not get the ship and sail. Israel, though, had to pass over. Israel got complacent in Egypt where they should not have been, and God had to move them out of there. And I don't want God to have to move us like he moved Israel. He had to send plagues to them. He had to send taskmasters. He had to send men with whips in their hands and with tough words on their lips, and he had to send the taskmasters and put their people, his people, into slavery. And to do that was necessary because the people had founded a shore ministry on the shores of Egypt and said, we don't want to pass over to the promised land. Folks, it is so easy to just put your roots settled and secure in a safe, non-aggressive, non-threatening, non-intimidating mode. And that is not what this church is made for. This ship right here is made for sailing. It's made for sailing to the other shore. It's made for sailing the seven seas. Israel had to pass over the promised land. Abraham, the Lord had said to Abraham, get thee out of thy country into a land that I will show thee. And Abraham had a tough time doing that. He had a hard time leaving mom and dad and brother Haran. And he wanted to stay in the land of Haran. And he stayed and stayed. In the next chapter, verse 1, now the Lord has said, he's going to say it again, get you out of your land and from thy kindred unto a land that I will show thee. Where am I going? He's not going to tell you. He says, but you're going to take off and start sailing, Abraham. Get going. Get out of here. And there comes a point when everybody has to take that bold, major step of faith. And sometimes it's not a tiny step. You can't always jump a chasm in two steps. Sometimes you got to make a bold jump into the future. Sometimes you must make a bold statement. And sometimes you got to stand on hind legs and say, this is where I stand. This is where we're going. All aboard. Let's go and sail to the other side. It was Jacob when he had left for fear of his brother who had to come back. And the Bible said he had to pass over the brook. He had to pass over to the promised land. Brother Howes came here in 1959. God was telling this church to pass over to the other side. It has been a great church, found with great ideals and trying to win the souls of the rough railroad and butcher shop people up here, the slaughterhouse men up here in the tough Hammond area. And Reverend Hill had a great vision to build this gospel ministry here. But through the years, the ups and downs, a church gets settled and it gets set to forget what its purpose is. Before you know it, the purpose is to come to church and either watch the pastor preach or to put in your hour and a half on a Sunday morning and to go through your ritualism. And God sent that Texas tornado up here from Texas, and he said, we're going to get off the shore of complacency and we're going to the other side. He said, get off the shore of denominational bosses telling us how to run our church, and let's get to the other shore of independent Baptist churches.
and let's get off the shore of formalism with the sevenfold amens and the preacher preaching in too formal of attire and the church choir robed in fancy robes and all the formalism that went with it, all the stained glass windows and all the pomp and ceremony, so to speak, that goes with it, and the playing of church. And he said, let's get out of that and let's get some buses out there and let's get the bathrooms heavily used. And let's make sure that our custodians earn their pay on Monday morning by the toil and work. I was with Brother Randy Erickson. We went to visit a big, huge mega church in the Chicagoland area this last weekend with a couple of fellows, and went to see their heating and ventilation system and their PA system and their flooring and how they clean the buildings and such, trying to get some ideas. And Brother Randy was saying to me, he said, look at this Monday morning. He said, look at this big, huge auditorium. He said, it's cleaner than ours is after we clean it. I said, yes. And I said, and would you take me to the parking lot and show me the buses? There aren't any there. I said, let's go to the restrooms. Let's look at the graffiti written on the wall by the people who drive the Lexuses. I said, they don't do that. I said, they're offering us $465,000 last Sunday, I said, because they don't have buses, they don't have Christian schools, they don't have Christian colleges, they don't have college kids running around with a parade of 25 bus kids behind them from junior 3 and 4. I said, our buildings are worn and torn. I said, this ship is well used. This ship is sailing in some heavy seas, and I said, we had a man who should have felt the shore of complacency and from the shore of denominational bosses and from the shore of formalism. For the house, and let's get off the shore of our out-of-touch worship services, he said, where the purpose is to impress rather than to inspire. Let's get off the shore of catering to the upper crust of society only. And he said, I don't want to do that. He said, God, I want the bus kids. And I thank God for a man who said, we're going to pack up off the shore. Let's get in the ship. Let's go to the shore. Let's go somewhere. Make some happen. Let's make some waves. Let's cause a wake. Let's turn the propellers. Let's make some action. Let's cause some froth. Let's kick up the foam. Let's move and go somewhere besides staying here on shore.
We had to tear some buildings down to begin an auditorium. And one of the biggest buildings, in fact, the largest building there was owned by the family that gave her the house a very difficult time. And they tried to own him and tell him how he preached and that he belonged to the ministry association. And he very wonderfully relates the story. So many times I hear him telling the story, how he's at their house and how they were very pampered and very catered to, an expensive meal. And he said, I so much want to eat that meal. I so much want to be accepted by this upper crust of society. He said, before I could get too many mouthfuls, he said, they had them fist on pinning me down. Are you going to join the ministry association? And he said, well, I'm thinking about it. And they won't let him have that as an answer, so what do you think about? And he said, well, I'll probably pray about it. Well, pray about it right now. You're going to join the ministry. And he talked about how that was a pressure point that was put on him, and right away he had to decide, am I going to kowtow to these folk who want to bend me to a certain direction I want to go, or are we going to take a stand? And we got pictures of that building coming down, and a new auditorium is being built on that property. And I'm not criticizing the family, simply saying it was God saying, we got to get off the shoreline. Stop building your buildings on the shoreline, and let's go across to the other side and use it for something better than that. And I love this idea. But when Brother Hiles died, this church had to make a decision. Do we stop now where the ship is anchored? We anchor temporarily while he had to pass to the other side called heaven and glory. But do we anchor now? Do we stay where we are? Do we just say, and by the way, it would have been so tempting. God is my witness. It would have been mighty tempting to say, Lord, here I am, the pastor of the largest independent Baptist church in America. Why do I want to worry about building and raising 25 some odd millions of dollars for one project? Why do I care? I've got a college, over 1,000 students, 1,500, 1,800 students out there. And I said, I've got the schools. Why do I want to start another Christian school up in Chicago, Baptist Academy? Why do I want to buy another piece of property and try to move City Baptist into a larger piece of property so they can grow more? Why do I want to build another building? Why refurbish all these buildings? It's been along fine. And it's been much easier to just sit back and say, I think I'll put my roots down deeper on the shore. That's not what this ship was made for. The ship was made for sailing. The ship was made for sailing to the other shores and taking the gospel to places
it has never gone before. And that's why we started the black chapel services right away, the inner city chapels, and then the Chinese chapel services, and we have some Philippine chapel services we're thinking about starting, and we've got 10 going now, and I want to start 25 before not too long, and I want to keep expanding. And we got the Christian school up there, and boy, I preached up there last Tuesday. What a great time that was, preaching those brand new kids. Saved almost every one of them, brand new convert and born again, excited about going to Christian school. And that's why we started the China Missions Project, and that's where we got tonight several members of our church in China teaching the English language and also having opportunity to present the gospel to these people. And that's why we spent tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars to get the gospel to the world. That's why we brought the mission board here, and Brother Mike Cox and I spent hours forging those two units together, and now the church runs the mission board, and we got our mission board sending out dozens and scores and eventually hundreds, and our goal, 1,000 missionaries to the four corners. Why? Because the ship was made for sailing. That's why. I don't want to sit still. I don't want to hand to the next generation an old rusty bucket that's been sitting anchored in the harbor too long with all the crustaceans on it and all those little shellfish stuck on it and all the rust holes in it and it's oozing water and leaking oil. I want to ship the challenge somewhere. I want to go somewhere. I want to do something big for God. We're the only mega church. We are the only mega church that I'm aware of, and I've studied this pretty carefully. We're the only mega church in this world without soul winning emphasis. All mega churches have soul winning. You don't get big without emphasizing getting a lot of people coming in. And all mega churches have some type of soul winning emphasis, but the biggest numbers you'll find in any ministry, take the large churches that are a little larger than us or smaller than us, the big size of it, same size, every mega church I've studied, our teenagers win more people to Christ on the soul winning marathon day than most of those churches win in a year. We don't win souls just to get big, we win souls because that's what it's all about, folks. That's what this ship was made for. It's a soul-winning ship and is meant to go soul-winning. Let's take the gospel everywhere we can. Let's launch it to the other shores and get every little hamlet and village and nook and cranny and neighborhood of the Lake County, Chicagoland area filled with the gospel. They filled Jerusalem with the truth of Jesus. Let's fill Chicagoland with the truth of Jesus Christ. Let's sail this ship into every avenue, every cul-de-sac, every harbor, every street, every little off-road, every dead end. Let's get the gospel everywhere because that's what this ship is all about. We are the only mega church. We're the only mega church in this world with our pursuit of the poor. Nobody has it like that. I have studied mega churches. Some of them are exclusively inner city works. They're pretty good size, a couple thousand people, not as large as ours. They're considered mega churches because they're over 2,000 people. But some of them are mainly inner city works. But none of them, if they are, they're just in that inner city. They don't reach out much. And I think of all those buses, the thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of boys and girls that rode the buses today. Thank God for a church that goes after the poor. May it always be so. Let's keep going after the poor. That's why I started the nursing home ministry shortly after I became pastor. Why? Because I want to reach out to the poor and expand it. That's why I did everything I can to help the Gospel League home grow and get more and more feed you fail the folks and run the buses and find the drivers. And that's why we're trying to expand every ministry we can to the poor. That's why in the next couple of years we're going to double the size of the bus ministry. Why? Because we're going to keep that reputation of a ship that's going to every shore where every poor person is because Jesus said that the miracle is the gospel that's preached to the poor. I want a miracle preaching church. To my knowledge, we're the only mega church with the strict standards of dress that we have. You won't find any mega church that has our standards of dress. None of them. Not a one of them. Not a one of them. Not even remotely close. Most of the women don't know what a skirt is or a dress is. And my criticism isn't of them. My emphasis tonight is let's not lose what this church is, but let's keep going to the other shore. Let's not ditch that. Let's not forget that this ship is unlike any other ship. Let's take pride in the uniform of the crew on this ship. My wife and I and my family, we've been on a couple of cruises. Brother Hiles sent us on one just about 6 months before he died. We went to the Caribbean cruise. And on that Caribbean cruise down there visiting the islands and such, I was I marveled at the way the crew ran and the smartness of the uniforms and the sharpness of the handling of procedures. And I noticed that they were not embarrassed to become part of the crew. They weren't embarrassed how they looked. And I want you to take pride in showing the crew members of this church. I don't mean just staff. I'm talking about members here. I want you members to stop whining and griping because you have a standard that is unlike anybody else's. So this ship is not like anybody else's. You stay on shoreline too long, you're going to put your anchor down the harbor of compromise. You're going to put your anchor down the harbor of immorality. You're going to put your anchor down the harbor. Before long, you want to look too much like that harbor. I don't want to do that. I want to keep sailing enough places that we maintain our uniqueness, lest we become like everybody else. Talking to those men from that visit we made last Monday, and I said, all these mega churches, I said, there is not one other one that emphasizes standards like we do. None. We're the only mega church that I'm aware of, and I've done a lot of study on this. I do not know of another mega church that exclusively has the kind of services we do. Some offer a traditional and a contemporary, but none of them offer only a traditional kind of service. At the very best, they offer a choice of two. You can rock and roll, or you can have the traditional one. Thank God for a ship that has kept the same standards all the way through. To my knowledge, we're the only mega church without the world of music and the drama. When I look at those big churches, I notice that they spend literally tens of millions of dollars on the platform here so it can revolve and go up and down, so it can have changing scenes. And the greatest compliment you get from them when you talk to them is, our drama program is better than that of Hollywood. And I want to say, when did Hollywood ever make it in the book? When has my standard ever been to be as good as Hollywood? I never want to sink that low. That's like saying our music is better than the Alaskan Pipeline or the Kenny Mays Sit Club. That's like saying our dress code is stricter than the Trump Casino. That's like saying that our new auditorium is going to be more of a drama place than Horseshoe Casino. Those are not my levels of acceptance. That's not my mark of what is good. The Book of Acts right there is my mark of what is good. I want this ship to keep on sailing, because if you stay too long in one harbor, you become acclimated to the crowd of that harbor. Before you know it, the denomination will start looking good to us again. Before too long, joining up with all the other churches, becoming one big giant. Before long, if you stay too long in one place, and don't keep reaching out and getting more people saved, knocking on doors, passing on gospel tracts. What happens is you start feeling like you're more in touch with the world, and I don't want to feel in touch with the world. Is this vile world a friend of grace to lead me unto God? Or I should fight if I'm to win and increase my courage, Lord. I'll bear the toil and do the pain supported by thy word. And when the battle's over, we shall wear a crown. I'm more interested in meeting approval of Jesus Christ than meeting approval of some denominational boss. I'm much more impressed with meeting approval of Jesus Christ as captain of this ship than I am anything else. I don't want to get stuck on the shores that we've been stuck on before. To my knowledge, we're the only mega church in the world that uses this Bible exclusively. I'm not aware of any mega church around 2,000 or more, that has exclusive use of the King James Bible. And the truth of the matter is, I don't know any that use a Bible exclusively. They use all the Bibles. The NIV and the American Standard Version, New American Standard Version, and the updated NIV and the New King James Bible. And my point is, I believe with all my heart that some of these mega churches in the last 25 years, we've seen a revolution take place. Since the 1980s, 1970s and 80s, we've seen a revolution take place in this country, and mega churches have popped up. 100 times more than we could ever imagine, and I think it's a big experiment. I'm afraid it's a big experiment from them to see if this is how a church can be built. And I fear for their life that with one generation, many of these so-called mega churches that have changed their King James Bible for an easy read, teenage edition Bible, an easy read Ebonics Bible, an easy read hip-hop kind of a Bible, an easy read kind of a punk rocker Bible, an easy read teenage bebop kind of a Bible. And I've seen them. I was in the bookstore, and I look at those bookstores, and they are a magazine of teenage. Here, right next to the King James, right next to the passage in the NIV is how to do your hair, how to do your nails, how to do your makeup. And I'm thinking the Bible has been equated nothing more than a new Vogue magazine, a new teen or 17 magazine. That's the Word of God, my friends. I'm not against you teaching girls how to do your hair and makeup, but let's not put that at the same level and the same article on the same page with John 3:16. And we're trying to get kids to read it. We're telling them to read it and offer the program and get their nose in the Bible. And if they'll read it, they'll find out it's a good book. That's a good book there. Teenagers by the dozens say, Brother Scott, I took the challenge to shut the TV off and I shut the music off for 6 months and I did nothing to read the Bible. That's a good book. Yes, it's a great book. But there's a big experiment taking place. They're trying everything they can to make the Bible more presentable. I mean, let's make the Bible more presentable. Don't make it presentable. And I'm trying to use the world's methods. And it's a big experiment. They're bringing Hollywood in and saying, let's copy the Hollywood singers. And boy, you go into the bookstore and you can find every hip-hop and rap artist. And as long as they got Christ or Jesus somewhere inside that label, they sell it. And it's a big experiment, folks. And the experiment that is going to show that they got stuck too long in the harbor called worldliness, and they are taking those churches right down into the sewer, and we won't have churches that too long. Churches become nothing more than an entertainment place. Churches where you go to watch movies. Some of the largest Christian colleges that started right at the same time Ohio does in college, they have built grand multi-million dollar movie complexes, and they show all the latest top movies from all Hollywood on it. And with all the filth and the disgusting things not in it, they bring in all the hottest artists, including artists that aren't even as their likeness from Christianity, but because they're hot and they bring a crowd in, and it's a great experiment. Folks, we are watching this experiment of these ships that do not want to go to the shores and take the gospel. They want to get in the harbor of Hollywood. They want to get on the shore of compromise. They want to get their anchor settled down where they say, hey, that's at a big party. We want to be just like everybody else. I don't want to be like everybody else. There's a whole lot of other little ships that are watching us. There's a whole lot of other little ships, little younger, smaller churches out there that are watching what First Baptist Church is doing. They're going to come to pastor school and see if our music has changed at all. Yeah, it has. It's gotten better. It got bigger. We got more. We're going to have a larger choir, but same old gospel songs. We're going to have an orchestra, but they're going to sing like they played, play like they played tonight. Good, Christian, godly, Christ-honoring music. And these other little ships are going to watch us, and the younger generation is watching us to see, are we going to sail to the right harbor? Are we going to keep on the same course? Far too many churches have anchored at the shores of worldliness, the shores of the unisex dress movement, the shores of political correctness. Folks, you are in a politically incorrect church. We're not beached on the shore of cross-dressing. We do not believe in gender neutrality. Most of you don't even know what those words mean. Just be against it. That's all that matters. We don't believe our teenage boys ought to wear their britches down around the rear end. You boys that do that ought to understand that that is a prison habit of men who want to show that they're available sexually to other men. You put your britches on like that, you're saying you're a cotton-picking, disgusting, Christ-rejecting queer. Get your britches up. We don't believe in transvestites. We don't believe in people that say, I was born a man, but I want to be a woman. I don't believe that's godly. I believe it's ungodly. And I don't believe you ought to dress like that even if you don't have a sex change operation. I think you men ought to be glad you're a man. A male by birth, man by choice. I think you ought to dress that way. And if we remain the only mega church of our kind and nobody joins us, well then, I want to be the one ship sailing the high seas that is unlike any other ship on the high seas. I'm not trying to be different from them. I'm just trying to keep them from changing you. Trying to keep Hollywood from changing you. And as hard as I preach, I can't keep up with you moms and dads that watch your housewives that want to seduce the neighbor. And I can't keep up with the kids that are having sex on television. I can't keep up with the women's lingerie advertisements on television. Shut the stupid box off. What are you trying to do? Go to a church like this that preaches against everything you watch, everything that you listen to, and you're trying to bring that heaven side of here, or you're trying to change that? You're not going to change Hollywood. Hollywood sold out to hell a long time ago. Stop trying to change it. My job is to keep Hollywood from changing you. I don't want that junk on this ship. I don't want the prisons to be trying to determine how our boys dress. And I don't want harlots in Hollywood who are trying to pick up another man 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 a week to tell you how to dress. I don't want the music industry telling you girls how to dress. Shut off your Jennifer Lopez tapes and CDs. Shut off your Britney Spears garbage. Shut off the worldly TV and get the music from First Baptist Church. If you don't like it, then change the taste buds. We're not stranded on the shore of gender-neutral lifestyles. I believe in men. I believe in women. There's a big difference between the two. You haven't figured that out, you ain't bred right. You understand the differences? You're not bred right. You understand a woman? You're not really a man. You understand a man? It's because you are one. This idea of trying to not offend the gays and defend the sodomites. They're not called gays in the Bible, they're called sodomites. And I want you to stop watching that junk and tell us because it's starting not to sound so bad to you. You need Brother Howes a little booklet. Jesus had short hair, and what's wrong with the sodomite movement and the gay rights movement? He predicted 25, 30 years that we'd see this day where people are in political office and our rights are going to be compromised. We're going to see this mess envelop everyone in churches. Oh, the largest churches in the nation. Huge, massive, mega church, big like we are. Even Cranes have a few more than we do even. Big, huge, influential church. You can't join their staff unless you believe in the women's rights movement. You get hired on staff and they ask you, do you believe in women's rights? Yes, I do. You can't say, no, I believe that men ought to rule. I think women ought to rule. And you say that, you don't get hired. Now, I believe in women's rights. I believe nothing exalts women more than Christianity. But this business of women preachers is not scriptural. This business of women running the homes is not scriptural. But he's Baptist smoking. I know you're married to a Hintech man. You should have married somebody else, but that's your fault, not mine. And you take that argument with God. You should have had a more discriminating taste when you're dating. Mama warns you, and I'm now telling you the same thing. You gals that are settling down for marriage now, you have to be real careful. If you can control them, they may be happy. But some of you gals are marrying somebody for security and protection, and he ain't got no hair in his legs. He uses mama's nair. You ought to sneak into his closet and check his underwear drawer. Make sure it's not laced in frills and pink. I was old-fashioned this time. I think girls ought to be brought home in pink and boys ought to be brought home in blue. And it bothers me when you college boys want to confuse the issue too much. I don't mind colored shirts, but I'm one of those narrow-minded bigots that think certain colors are masculine, certain colors are not. If that bothers you, then keep on being bothered because you're on my ship now. We ain't going to toss you overboard and make you walk the plank. A whole lot of guys right now wish they could change shirts with somebody. Yeah, I'm just looking to pick a gander on those. I'm going to see who I'm preaching to. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, they're hiding. They're hiding. Yeah, they're hiding up there. That's good. Find some big old fat boy. Hide behind her. Some big fat girl. Hide behind her. We're in a church right here that we don't care if you get offended by that stuff. Now, I love you no matter what color you wear, but I plan to change your color. I believe you in the church. There's certain things are right and certain things are wrong. Most of what you do is wrong. ...99.9% of everything you watch on television, Jesus Christ would not approve of. 85% of the music you listen to, Jesus Christ would not approve of. Come on now, you're getting quiet on me.
You don't even know what music is.
Most of the stuff you call entertainment is stuff that Jesus Christ would cringe at. The video you bring home and the video you rent, I'll be honest with you, I couldn't rent. I couldn't belong to a rental place. You gotta walk through too much sewer to see it all. If there are three good movies in a rental place, I would want to find them because you gotta dig through the garbage can to find them. And you gotta look at all the unclad women, all the lustful viewing, and all the immorality and all the filth, and you gotta have your mind corrupted. By the time you find a good one, you feel so broken down and cheap. If you don't pick one of the filthy ones up, you feel like you don't fit in with the crowd. If you do buy the good one, the people don't know what you're buying. You know, I don't want to be raptured out of Blockbuster. I don't want to stand next to the Apostle Paul and Paul say, so where were you when Jesus came back? I don't want to sit in a Hollywood video. Oh, what were you buying? The Passion of Jesus Christ? He can't, yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, he could have read about it. He said in the book of Romans.
Praise that we call good things, the good things we do call good. Even those are tainted by immorality and filthy language. Time for all of us, pastor, deacon, staff, all of us to look at the ship library and say, is this the stuff we want on board? Are these the lifestyles that we want to endorse? We've got other little ships that are following us, folks. You see, that the ship that Jesus was in, he was running that ship. Now look at the condition on that ship, and it was a mess. And the ship when Jesus was there was a mess. A bunch of scared disciples filled with unbelief, and they were not trusting Christ, and they were acting like a bunch of wimps and wusses. And I think, if that was a ship with Jesus on it, what were those other little ships filled with? You see, Daddy, if you don't have the guts of the manhood to say, we're not going to have that in our house, and Mom, if you don't have the Christian submission to endorse what your husband believes, then the other little ships are going to come behind and they're going to get way lost when the storm comes. I worry about those other little ships. I worry about those next generation, these little ones coming up behind us. Are we sending the right signals? Do we have the right stuff on our ship? The ship of your home. Similar to the ship called this church. Would your entertainment be approved in this auditorium here? If we showed the videos that you watched the last 7 days on the screen up here, how would you feel about it? I asked your teenagers to come to my house and watch what you watched at your house. Would you like what the pastor is feeding them? I want to ask you those questions. I don't want you to hide behind anybody or anything. I want you to be right on board with this ship. Far too many churches have anchored deeply in the harbor of worldliness in Hollywood, and they're drinking deeply on the shoreline of those ungodly places. I look at these big mega churches, and I want to tell these pastors and say, I appreciate your vision, I appreciate your skill, I appreciate your oratorical ability, and I appreciate your organizational skills. But I ask you, my friend, what are the other little ships coming behind you going to have? If you're feasting in Hollywood today, what's left of the little ships coming behind you? The lines are blending and converging so closely you can't tell too much. If you go to a Christian rock concert now, you have to listen a long time before you figure out it's a Christian rock concert. And since when is Christian rock concert a proper name anyway? You kids that want your contemporary Christian music, can we have contemporary Christian adultery? How about contemporary Christian fornication? How about contemporary Christian cussing? How about contemporary Christian worldliness? How about contemporary Christian liquor? How long is it going to be before it's okay to drink a little wine, then a little more wine, then a lot of wine, and then why have our own brand? Let's just use it the world because we're better at it anyway. Is that why are we trying to compete with the world? When has this world ever offered us an avenue to godliness? What has Marilyn Manson got to offer you that's going to make you more like Jesus Christ? What has Metallica got to offer you, kids? What has this group, rap, music, what has Eminem got to offer besides John Kerry? Got the top rapper endorsing a man, what has reason enough for me to flinch? Eminem, a white boy, singing black man's music because a black man does. That isn't music, that is trash. Get mad at me, keep in mind, this captain is not trying to be politically correct. I think rap music is out of hell. No, I don't think it's black man's music. I think it's godless music. I think godly black people and godly white people and godly Puerto Rican people and godly Mexican people and godly anybody people have godly music. I think ungodly people listen to ungodly music. I don't care what color they are, what stripe they are. And you can go ahead and say, but the music of this age is rap music. Just give me, this world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. Just give me the old rugged cross. Just give me blessed assurance, Jesus, mine. Just give me greatness, my faith in this old cup, my Father. There is no shadow of changing for any of thee. That music that you listen to when you're dancing and writhing like you're in pain, you really think Jesus and the disciples are the God who counsel to that? You really think the Lord Jesus Christ would have endorsed Eminem? The Lord Jesus Christ would have endorsed the music groups that are in your video and music library? Then Jesus Christ would have sat down on that ship and said, hey, Peter, put on that favorite rap music I like so much. And, you know. Foolishness. You don't want to say it's out of hell? Okay, I'll be kind to you. It's stupid. It is music of people who do not have a vision, do not have an ounce of godliness, and have not figured out where the truth is right here. We don't want to bring that music into our churches, and now there are Christian rap groups that are going around the country. I get deluged with their advertisements. Dear Reverend Scott, one of the hottest things going now is a great Christian rapper. He can bring the young people to you. No, it's easy to divide and lift it up, I'll draw them into them. Let's magnify the Lord, Jesus Christ, and let him draw the people. We probably have about 1,500 to 2,000 teenagers on this property today. Not one rap song brought them in. But a hard-working soldier knocked on their door and said, can I tell you about Jesus Christ? That's what got them. I'm not trying to be politically correct. I'm trying to be spiritually correct. We're not to be anchored in the harbor of free love and free sex. All freedom is expensive, and it costs men's souls and sacrifice to preserve freedom. And you better understand that you can have your free love and free sex and say, but I want it now. Let me tell you something. It is costly. Other little ships got to come behind this mom and dad and find out what self-discipline and self-control is and selflessness is. That's point one. Point number two, I want to take the other little ships with me. I say to the next generation, I want you to be able to follow in my wake. I want to steam a nice passage to the seas so you can follow close behind us. I worry about those little kids coming up behind us, how clear of a signal you're sending at home, mom and dad. How clear are you making it known? How clear are you making salvation? How clear are you making the standards known? How clear are you making the right Bible known? How clear are you making it? Mom and dad, your kids are catching you on your knees praying. By the time they catch you on your knees, it's filling with the video cable because reception's not very good. By the time they catch you on your knees beside the porcelain throne, heaving up your liquor from the night before. By the time they catch you on their knees where you're begging your spouse not to leave you for another woman, another man. Let them catch you on your knees beseeching the throne of grace. Let them see what it's like to see a dad with his hands up stressed like that, praising his God. Let them see it like I saw my dad every morning, 6 o'clock on his face, on the sofa, praying to God. Let them see, like I see my wife every morning, praying out to God, a great prayer warrior. We need some prayer warriors back here. Shut the poop box off and get on your knees and pray. I mean that. From sins better. Stop bringing Hollywood in your home. Name me one redeeming thing on regular program television. That's what I thought. Maybe like a flower and garden show. Okay, maybe on cable television, there might be something like that. I've heard the History Channel isn't too bad. I don't have it. I'm on cable, not against it, but I'm not for it either. I don't have satellite dish, I'm not against it, but I am. My point is, almost every show I know is not worth watching, and most of the good ones are simply a waste of time. Same thing as your stupid computers. Most of you spend hours and hours and hours and hours and hours chasing that little mouse all over and that little icon all over you. You're getting clicking and double-clicking and triple-clicking and click here, click there, there, click, click. And you got the internet, you got this, and this guy, we don't watch pornography. I bet you've seen it, though. I bet it's been on your computer. And if it hasn't been, you spend hours doing nothing. No time with your wife. You ain't got time to build a good marriage. You're busy chasing some of the chick on the internet. You're busy in the chat room with some other man who's got a nameless, faceless, cowardly attitude who wants to steal you from your husband. All this foolishness. Let's dump all that technology for interference and get back to black and white print, small print, no pictures, and let's read the Bible and let's see if God can change us. You don't believe that, though. And I understand that that's primitive archaeology, that's old, 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 old-fashioned stuff with a scholar. You're young enough, don't you? The technology is here. I know it's here. And I hate everything about it. I hate it because it robs mom and dad of quality time. It takes you away from playing games in the family. It robs you from reading good books. You know, God intends you to read. That's why I wrote 66 books. You know, the greatest thing you teach your kids is to read and then to work because you're supposed to read what you're supposed to do for God. You know, we haven't taught our kids to read. We let the computer teach them how to read. And they spend time in that blue, fuzzy box right there, the hour, and they just become nothing more than a... You can't date now unless you get on the internet and get matched up by a computer. Am I against that? No, some of you ought to join. The only hope you got. You got a high-tech personality. Click and date. Click and bait. I'm not against all the technology, I just am, because it keeps pulling people away from good things. We'll keep using technology. One of these days, we'll even have a web page up for 3 years now, and it said under construction. We still ain't got one. And I told Brother Marshall, I said, you better get one for me. I don't want to use it, but the world wants to know what kind of web page First Baptist Church is going to have. I'm going to put a big Bible and say, read it. Our webpage is www.readthebible. Where's that found? KJV, buddy. You know, it's the mentality that we've got to have all this high-tech stuff. Has it helped our homes? No. Has it strengthened our churches? No. Has it brought us closer to Christ? No. Has it given us a greater stability? No. I'm not on the losing side of this. I know we're going to have some high-tech in our ship here. But the truth is, I want the truth. I don't want all this garbage. I want you to have a strong home. I want those little ships come behind you to say, I can follow that wake. I can follow that ship right there. It's going somewhere. Oh, man, I got to shut up. Yeah, you don't mean that. That must be sound asleep in college tomorrow.
Yes.
Next generation's watching us. Younger, smaller churches across this country and the world are looking to us. They're wondering if we'll change to the worldly mold. Let me just give you the next 3 points. In this passage, and here's what I was really going to, once they got in the ship, a huge storm came. I'm going to caution you, First Baptist Church. I want you to listen very carefully to me. This really is where I was going with the whole message. Once those ships all got together and the little ships got behind them, the very next thing you read, the rest of the story is about a horrible storm that came.
I have no doubt that in the days and years and to come, Dick, I don't mean day like tomorrow, but I'm talking about in my generation to come, we're going to face some huge storms in this country. I think the days are going to come, we're going to see battles like we've never seen. The issues that are dividing our nation are no longer just political issues. They are moral issues of great scriptural import, as Mr. Keyes intimated a little while ago. Abortion, the gay rights, this gender neutrality. As we preachers preach against it more and more, it's going to draw huge lines. What's going to happen is we better make sure that we give those other little ships a lot of security to come behind us. Because we're only going to lead them. I doubt we're going to lead some of these younger generation kids into a big storm. You younger kids come to see you, young ones in your early 20s and your late teens, you're going to come into some big battles. That's one reason why you better stay real close to mama ship right here. That's one reason you better stay very, very close to what's preached. You better get close to what is preached from this pulpit as you can, because when a ship gets into a storm, it's unlike anything else on land. You don't just hug a tree and hope the wind blows down. There's no place to hide. You can lose your bearings very quickly, and north, moral, true north, gets very confusing. And theology, theological north, loses its bearing. You're not sure what you believe anymore. Let me warn all of you who are coming into your 20s. The 20s are the most unstable decade of your life. Everything you believe is up for grabs, and your moral compass spins. And your theological compass spins. And you start putting up for grabs everything you thought you nailed down as a junior age boy or girl. You better stay real close to the captain's ship. You better get your ship right next to that big old ship. I don't want to lose the other little ships coming behind us. I don't want to lose the little kids coming behind us. Dad, if ever we've needed true moral north, we need dads to point north. If ever we've needed men coming through college to say, here's what I believe, it's right there. If ever we need some narrow-minded men to say, we're very focused on what we believe and where we're going, we need it today. I'm not trying to be all things to all men. I'm trying to be this one thing I do kind of a man. We're in for some big storms, and I fear them for the little ships. I don't fear them for me at all. I'm not worried about any battles we go through. I'm worried about the little ships. I'm worried about the younger little churches come behind us and the pressure to conform and change. We go to the other shore. Let me say this. Not for fear or flight, because we follow Jesus. We're moving somewhere because of are following Christ, and let me close by saying this, we follow because we love Him. I don't lead this church, and I don't preach the way I do because I'm scared. I lead the church because I'm in love. I'm not so much scared of what could happen to our church. I'm in love with the captain of the ship, Jesus Christ. We have the Stevenson, who said men who have offered their lives for their country know that patriotism is not the fear of something, it is the love of something. I'm not afraid to follow Jesus. I follow because I love Him. And I'd follow Him anywhere. And I don't want to pass on to the next generation the fear of what's the future going to hold. No, I want to pass on the love of following Christ. As we follow Christ, we're going to go into the big storms. I'm not going to make any predictions or step out the limb of prophecy of anything. I'm just saying I believe the day is going to come when First Baptist Church is going through storms like she's never seen before. That does not bother me as long as we are focused on the captain and our love is rock solid. You see, when you follow somebody because you love them, then the storms don't shake you. They just pull you closer together. When you follow because you're afraid, then storms shake you apart and you flee for the shoreline. And I don't want to run to shore. I was reading a story that kind of provoked the sermon here. I was reading a story about a naval admiral, and he said to his fleet, he said, there's a big major storm coming. Let's get away from shore. Let's pull up the anchors. Let's get out to sea, because that's where we handle the storms the best. I like that. Let's keep on running the buses because that's how we handle the storms the best. Let's keep on knocking on doors because that's how we handle storms the best. If a storm comes, this nation is plummeted in dark days. I don't remember there's nothing on the horizon I see against this church. I'm simply saying that the way our nation is going, I see problems for churches that take strong stands like we do. But we'll ride out the storm as long as we keep on the high seas going to the other side. I want you to inventory your life. I want you to inventory your footlocker. I want you to see what you're bringing on board your sea bag. And I want you to make sure you're not bringing Hollywood in here. I want you to make sure you're not bringing hell inside you. I want you to make sure that we are on board at home and on the ship. I want to make sure that we're going to the other shore with something worth giving them. You know, we go to China, what are we going to give them? American rock and roll? We get this big public school ministry going with my vision of reaching hundreds, even thousands of teenagers to struggle in that area. We're going to give them our version of Eminem. Are we trying to impress them with our version of Metallica and Marilyn Manson? We're trying to give them something new, a new song, if put in my mouth. I want the world to hear what First Baptist Church has, because what we have is what the world needs to hear. Bow your heads and close your eyes, please. There's a lot of other little ships out there, young men who are pastoring 30, 40 people tonight and trying to keep the bills paid or looking to this church to make sure we stay the course. There's little ministries out there being built by hardworking men on the foreign field trying to get 100 people gathered together and trying to make ends meet financially and hoping to come to pastor school and make sure that pastor school shows that we haven't changed. There's other little ships out there that want to be sure they don't get capsized and shipwrecked because we run over them in our haste. Let's make sure we offer those other little ships protection and security. For the young generation called your children sitting beside you, let's make sure that we're showing them the right way. Let's make sure we got anchored in the harbor of compromise and worldliness in Hollywood. Let's make sure we're showing those other little ships how to cruise on the seven seas, how to weather the storms of life. Father, to bless the invitation, I pray. Save souls and change lives and help us to get recommitted to sailing to the other side. Please, shall we stand? The choir will stand.